Welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are glad that you are with us today. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, a summer of discovery is taking shape at the North Dakota Gateway to Science. From preschool moon missions to summer camps and community tree planting, we'll preview a full slate of hands-on learning designed to spark curiosity for all ages. And then what makes sound actually sound great? Tech expert George Peck joins us for Tech with Peck to break down the science of sound, from room-filling speakers to high-end headphones or earbuds. It's what listeners should really be listening for. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. It's now time for a closer look with the Monitor. It's our weekly visit with reporters from the North Dakota Monitor, bringing context and accountability to the stories shaping North Dakota. And of course, you can read all of the Monitor's reporting anytime you would like at NorthDakotaMonitor.com. It's free from subscriptions or paywalls. And today we're visiting with Jacob Orlich about transparency in state government and his reporting that six North Dakota legislators failed to file required financial disclosure forms. It comes as those disclosures have been made available online for free and as lawmakers continue expanding reporting requirements. Jacob, welcome back to A Closer Look with the Monitor.
Thanks for having me on, Craig.
Jacob, let's start with the headline. What did you find regarding these six legislators and their disclosure forms?
Well, as I was reviewing the statements of interest, the financial disclosures of state officials in North Dakota, I discovered that there were six sitting lawmakers in the North Dakota legislature who had not filed their statement of interest this year, missing the new annual filing deadline on January 31st. And this review was occurring several weeks ago, so they were nearly 3 months past the deadline at that point.
What exactly are these financial disclosure forms, Jacob, and why are they required?
So financial disclosures are something that elected and appointed officials have to fill out, essentially to help people identify what might be a conflict of interest. In North Dakota, we call these personal financial disclosure forms a statement of interests. This is not the same thing as campaign finance reporting. So this does not have to do with campaign contributions or expenditures. These are the disclosures that tell the public what a given candidate, lawmaker, member of a board, or state official like the governor have in terms of financial interests, associations with organizations, and other categories.
So then this information is the kind of information that the public or watchdogs are then able to see.
Yes, essentially, it's a standardized disclosure that everyone has to fill out, and therefore the public has the same level of information, theoretically, on everybody who is representing them in the legislature, on these boards, in statewide office.
You also reported that these records are now available online for free. How significant is that change for transparency?
It is a significant change. And I say that as a reporter, as somebody who routinely examines these documents, looking for information and checking that they were filled out correctly. To be able to access every statement of interest online is, dare I say, a game changer. And the reason they are now online is a law was passed in the 2025 legislative session directing the Secretary of State's office to do so. The Secretary of State's office, which is the filing agency these documents are filed with, this office created this website and starting this year began uploading all statements of interest and other documents like campaign finance documents to this website, making it publicly available at the touch of a button. Prior to this year, you typically had to make an open records request for a specific document or a specific group of documents. And while that was a relatively easy process working with the Secretary of State's office, it is still significantly more accessible when they're posted online in the first place.
Jacob, what happens then when a legislator fails to file? Are there penalties or enforcement mechanisms that are then in place?
Yes. So there's multiple parts to that question. First, you have to understand that there are two different requirements at play here. Prior to this year, the only time an elected or appointed official was required to file a statement of interest was when they were first appointed to a board or when they were first filing for election. So legislators, for example, would only have to file a statement of interest every 4 years when they ran for election and re-election. Beginning this year, legislators, boards, and statewide officers had to begin filing these statements of interest annually. The deadline for that annual filing was January 31st. As far as consequences go, generally speaking, there are a few different consequences that could happen. Late filings of these statements of interest. Well, for candidates, if you don't file your statements of interest in time, you don't appear on the ballot. For sitting lawmakers who have to comply with that annual filing requirement now, there will be late fees attached to any late filing. Those late fees were waived by the Secretary of State's office for these six lawmakers who missed the deadline this year. And that is because it is a new annual filing requirement and it is a new system online where they have to file these electronically. So the Secretary of State's office decided to give these late filers a grace period, essentially, that they're assuming there might be some errors in the first year of operation. Beginning next year, there will be late fines up to $100, depending on how late it is. There are also other potential consequences that are laid out in the state law governing statements of interest. One of those potential consequences is if errors are discovered on a statement of interest, potentially a candidate's name could be kept off a ballot. There are also potentially more serious consequences towards the end of the state law that governs these statements of interest. The attorney general and state's attorneys are charged with investigating any potential intentional violations of that law. And there are no specifics in state law as to what constitutes intentional or what mistakes would rise to the level that these consequences would come into play. But theoretically, the attorney general's office could seek to essentially void a nomination, an appointment, or an election. So there are theoretically some very serious consequences to not following the state law.
Enjoying my conversation with Jacob Orlich. He's a reporter with the North Dakota Monitor. This is our weekly conversation we call A Closer Look with the Monitor. Today, we're talking about transparency in state government and his reporting that six North Dakota legislators failed to file required financial disclosure forms. Jacob, do we know why these particular lawmakers didn't file? Is it oversight? Is it resistance? Is it something else?
I spoke to all six lawmakers who did not file a financial disclosure by the January 31st deadline. There was no resistance. There was no opposition to filing it. The general response appeared to be that it was an oversight. Either the lawmakers were under the impression that they had filed the statement of interest at the same time they filed their campaign finance reporting, because the two documents, the two disclosures, share the same deadline on January 31st. Others were of the impression that they were not required to file the statement of interest annually because they are not seeking re-election this year. So there were a variety of responses, but they were all they all indicated a willingness to file it late once they were notified that the requirement applied to them.
Are those missing filings, have they been submitted?
The majority of them have. Most of them were filed. I believe three of them were filed within a matter of hours or days after I reached out and reached out to those lawmakers. One other has been filed earlier this week, I believe I saw. And two others, so two of the six, I have not seen yet on the Secretary of State's website. So I'm not sure what the delay is there, but all six indicated a willingness to file it late.
What's new with financial reporting requirements this year?
Well, there's a couple of new requirements, and we've touched on several of them. One of the big ones is everything is online. So that is a big change for accessibility by the public. Another new requirement this year is that annual filing deadline. So everybody has to file on an annual basis between January 1st and January 31st as to their financial interests in the prior year. The 2025 legislature added a new section to the form. This section requires anybody who files a statement of interest to disclose the fact that they sold more than $5,000 of goods or services to a government agency or political subdivision like a county. If that sale came from a business that they own more than 10% interest in. So there are some narrow requirements on what payments are required to be disclosed, but that is a new requirement effective this year.
Jacob, how does North Dakota compare to other states when it comes to disclosure or transparency rules?
North Dakota generally has fewer financial disclosure requirements, and I'm talking personal financial disclosure requirements, not campaign finance reporting, but North Dakota generally has fewer requirements for those personal financial disclosures than other states. The change to require annual filings is a big improvement. It brings North Dakota into line with the vast majority of states in the country. Many states also require more detail as to what needs to be disclosed. Many states also require more detail as to what needs to be disclosed. One ethics and transparency advocate that I spoke to a few years ago for a related story said that North Dakota had quote unquote clearly inadequate disclosure. So that is the sense I've gotten from speaking to national experts on this issue.
Is there a broader concern, Jacob, here about conflicts of interest or public trust?
Potentially. One of the ways that the public, that the voters can become aware of conflicts of interest or perceived conflicts of interest or even potential conflicts of interest down the road when they're deciding whether to elect somebody is through disclosures like these. So if somebody spots a financial interest in a company or a financial relationship with a government agency, they are then able to monitor the elected official's actions in relation to that company or that agency to see if a potential conflict of interest emerges down the road. It's not an exact science, and of course, every voter may feel differently about that, but in theory, that is what these financial disclosures are supposed to accomplish.
So what you're saying then is for everyday North Dakotans, this shouldn't matter. These disclosures are used to discover potential conflicts of interest, which could be important because of varying types of legislation that comes before the legislature.
Yes, that's exactly right. But right now, I'd like to throw out the other side of the argument here, and that is a lot of legislators will explain to you that they are part of a citizen legislature. These are people who serve the state in their role for primarily for 4 or 5 months every 2 years. The rest of the time, they are an everyday citizen. They have their own jobs. They have their own financial interests. It's a little bit different from states where somebody's a full-time legislator or even a part-time legislator who works 6 months out of every year, who works for the state 6 months out of every year. So there is that dynamic at play with a citizen legislature. The legislators will often tell you that it's inevitable that there's going to be conflicts. And on some votes, if you invalidated the votes of everyone who had a borderline conflict, potentially it wouldn't be feasible to pass legislation on certain topics. So there is that perspective to be taken into account.
Who's the watchdog for this? Theoretically, is it the Secretary of State's office? And have they said anything about this matter?
So who the watchdog is on statements of interest is a tricky question. The Secretary of State's office says that they are a filing agency and typically not a compliance agency. So they are not necessarily checking that the contents of a statement of interest are accurate or verifying any information in there. They do check that candidates file a statement of interest because that is a requirement for somebody to get their name on an election ballot. They were not checking this year to see if sitting legislators had met the new annual filing requirement, the deadline for which was January 31st. The state law governing statements of interest charges state's attorneys in each county and the Attorney General's office with investigating and enforcing alleged violations of that state law. Beyond that, I'm not aware of any other state agency or government entity that enforces that law.
For North Dakotans who want to view these forms, where should they go?
They can go to the Secretary of State's website. If they look under the Elections tab, there should be a Statements of Interest webpage, and there is a link there that can bring you to the online system where all the Statements of Interest starting on January 1st of this year have been filed and are available for public review.
Jacob, do you anticipate more discussion in terms of future compliance or possible policy changes?
I think it's a little too soon to know for sure, but this general topic has been a matter of discussion in previous legislative sessions, most notably in 2025, when several changes were made, as we've discussed. So I would expect it to come up as a topic of discussion during the 2027 legislative session. To what extent, I'm still not sure on. And of course, other related matters such as campaign finance reporting, I would also expect to be a subject of discussion in the upcoming session. But more immediately, no, there have been no proposed changes that I've been aware of.
That's Jacob Orlich. He's with the North Dakota Monitor. He joins us for a closer look with the Monitor. You can read more about his reporting and explore those newly available financial disclosures at the Secretary of State's office. And of course, you can read Jacob's reporting at the NorthDakotaMonitor.com website, free from subscriptions, free from paywalls. Jacob, thanks for your reporting.
Thanks for having me on here to talk about it, Craig.
Plains Art Museum in Fargo hosts its Spring Gala 2026 Nightmare at the Museum, Saturday, May 2nd from 7 p.m. to midnight. The event includes food, wine tasting, an art auction, and music by DJ Ower. More information at plainsart.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, back to talk about North Dakota Gateway to Science. It's a hands-on science center in Bismarck designed to make science engaging, interactive, and accessible, especially for kids and families, but also for educators and lifelong learners. Joining me today is Emily Montgomery. She's a STEM educator at North Dakota Gateway to Science. Emily, we have a lot of fun events coming up now that May is about upon us. Give us the rundown.
Yes, thanks, Craig. We have so many amazing fun things coming up here. We are always busy bees here. One of our fun things we have coming up here soon is on May 13th and 16th, we have our preschool discovery hour. And that one is called Mission to the Moon. And I am personally very excited about this one because, as in the name, it's all about our Artemis II launch and
very timely.
right? And it's teaching littles about the moon on their level. So not only is it STEM-based, but it's also at a preschool development level. So it's everything preschoolers need for hand-eye coordination. There's, of course, imaginative play. There's Alka-Seltzer rockets that are always a great time for them. So it just creates and sparks that curiosity for them.
I want to play.
Right? You're invited. You can definitely come. And we also have, on another note, our tree planting on May 14th. And this one is very near and dear to our hearts because we are honoring Frank Cook. He is the one who started this vision with North Dakota's Gateway to Science. And he's sadly passed away, but we are honoring him and his family with a tree planting on May 14th. And so we are very excited to do this in our outdoor explorium, which is, this is our first summer being fully open now with it. We opened last year, but now this is our first official summer with it. So we're very excited to have that tree planting. So that will always be there in our outdoor explorium as an honor for him and his family. And we also have our visiting scientist series. We have trivia at Laughing Sun on May 20th at 7 p.m. That's just a free will donation. And if you love trivia and you love science, or maybe you want to use this as a great experience to learn more, we will be having that coming up on May 20th. And we also have summer camps coming up. That is for not only first through fifth grade, but middle school as well. But that will be starting at May 25th. And that will be for the first through fifth grade. That will be every single week up into August. So we have a lot of amazing things coming up for all ages.
How can people learn more and then register for summer camps?
That is on our website, and we also have scholarships available on our website as well. It's on a first-come, first-served basis for our summer camps, and like I said, it's a great opportunity. It's every single week for grades first through fifth, or it can also be for middle school, but middle school dates are different, so just be sure to check out the website and also register online as well.
And that website address is gatewaytoscience.org. Lots going on. What are your hours? How can people come each and every day?
Yes, our hours are listed on our website. And I will note that we are now going to have different hours starting this weekend. So now we will actually be open on Tuesdays, which is such exciting news because now we're not just open 6 days out of the week. We are now open 7 days. So that is something really to look forward to. So check out those hours since they will be new and different on our website. So that's something that we're really looking forward to see everyone even more.
It's nice that summer is upon us almost.
Almost, yes.
Emily Montgomery, she's a STEM educator at the North Dakota Gateway to Science in Bismarck. It's truly a wonderful place. If you've not had a chance to see it, put that on your list this summer. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
Still to come on Main Street, how much should those headphones cost if you want incredible sound? That's ahead on Tech with Peck after this news. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and we spend a lot of time talking about what we watch, George Peck and I, here on Tech with Peck, on our screens, our devices, and our cameras. And we talked a little bit about audio last week, but what is it about what we hear? From our living room speaker setups to the earbuds in your pocket, audio technology has evolved very quickly, and not all listening experiences are created equal. What actually makes something sound good? Is it the gear? Is that format that we talked about last week, the room or our ears? Of course, George joins us now. It's Thursday, and I have one George Peck story that surprised
God.
Me. Yeah.
All right.
About this that we might as well start with because you and I are both wearing headphones as we visit today.
Mm-hmm.
You will be saddened to learn that I am using Bose headphones. Because I recall that you don't think those sound as good as other options. So let's start talking about sound, George.
I don't want to get sued for, defamation.
Neither do I.
But I will tell you that a radio engineer that I met who was incredibly conscious of sound, referred to Bose as bring other sound equipment. So, we always had a good laugh at that. So when I was young, one of my first speakers was the Bose 301. So there was the Bose 301 that was the bookshelf, the 501 that was a little bigger bookshelf, and the 901s that sat on little stands. And these were very coveted, popular speakers. But as I matured, I began to listen to other speakers like Advents. There's a memory to come back. Headphones, okay, you got Bose. I have the headphones that if you watch any behind-the-scenes movie documentary or video documentary, 99% of movie directors or movie sound people are wearing the Sony 9506s. And that's what I have on my head.
That makes it different than what I'm wearing.
Yeah. And so it was a matter of listening to different sets of headphones and listening to the way they reproduce sound and to be honest, to a certain extent, color sound. Because one person's pure uncolored sound will be another person's extended highs or extended lows. So it's a matter of preference as to whether you're hearing the true, you know, waveform as it was originally recorded, or if there's some kind of coloration or enhancement. What I love about the Sony 9506s is that they cover the entire spectrum of frequency. So we talk about hertz, which is number of cycles per second of air moving. Bass is very low. High frequencies are violins, cymbals. And if you got the full range, you will hear a beautiful bass note from a kick drum, from a bass guitar, from an electronic synthesizer, all the way up to a very pure sounding cymbal or violin string or flute and everything in between. And the full frequency spectrum and reproducing that spectrum accurately is what I consider to be a quality reproductive instrument, be it speakers, headphones, earbuds, whatever. The more range of frequencies you can hear accurately presented, beautiful bass. I'm kind of a bass junkie, to be honest with you. I have two subwoofers in this room, not just one. And this is my office. This isn't even my theater. But all the way up to, I listen to the cymbal on a drum. Okay. And I want to hear it purely, no distortion, just. That's the beautifulness of a good set of headphones or earbuds, is we hear all of it purely.
I'm guessing that maybe, I don't know, 95%, maybe higher, of people who listen to audio today listen in earbuds and don't use headphones. Maybe it's not that high, but it's certainly
lots.
Higher than it
oh,
was
yeah.
years ago. Can sound be reproduced equally well in an earbud?
So theoretically, no, because physically it wouldn't be possible, because theoretically, physically, to reproduce a bass note, the driver has to be enough of a certain size to be able to reproduce that very low frequency. So I will also drop another brand name, and that is Apple AirPods. And I've got, I think, a third generation of those, and I am floored by how good they sound. So I still like the comfort of the Sony 9506 is fitting over my entire ear. Maybe I don't have the right, you know, insert for the AirPod because they fall out of my ears every once in a while. And I got to dig them out of like the under the mattress or under the seat in the sofa. But when they stay in, they sound damn good. So that technology has advanced so much over the past few years, at least for Apple AirPods, that I now enjoy very nice sound from them. I think the headphones are more comfortable, but I cannot complain about the sound quality of the AirPods.
How much do your headphones cost?
$99. This is a $99 pair of headphones.
And not it's, that expensive.
No, they're not at all. I mean, and some of the Bose, I mean, okay, then the other thing, this the gentleman that I told
mine
you
mine were
about,
more expensive than $99.
Right,
bucks.
Right. Yeah. There was a set of Sennheisers that, this engineer loaned me. He was a Sennheiser rep for a while. Sennheiser is, again, a very high-end. I'm talking on Sennheiser microphone right now. But Sennheiser also does headphones. And they had, I think it was $700 for this set of headphones. It had, you know, its own control box. And I didn't like, I thought these $99 Sony sounded better. So these sound great. They're $99. The dollar figure doesn't always, again, in my opinion, equate to the quality sound. You got to listen to them and see what you think. And you might get a very nice sound out of a $99 pair of Sonys as opposed to a $400 or $500, you know, high-end Bose or Sennheiser.
Do you ever turn on noise canceling, George?
My wife snores. So if I'm in...
No secrets here. Sorry.
If I'm sitting, you know, I'm not going to tell you her name, Mrs. Peck. But if I'm in the bedroom and I'm having a little trouble going to sleep, I will pop the AirPods in, and they have a very adequate and impressive noise cancellation feature. That's typically the only time I will do it. When I come in this room and pop on these Sonys, they don't have that feature. So I just enjoy the music and it's a quiet room. But occasionally, in certain sleeping situations, I will turn the feature of the AirPods on.
Did you ever watch a movie wearing headphones?
There's something about that I don't like. I will put the AirPods in and listen to a movie, mostly to put myself to sleep. So it's not a movie I want to pay attention to. In good old days, when I was in an apartment or maybe someplace where I didn't want to disturb people, or there was someone in the house who was, you know, sleeping and I didn't have a home theater two floors down, I would wear headphones. But I really prefer a movie either in my family room with still my 5.1 surround sound, or in my theater that we talked about earlier in the series with 11.1 Dolby Atmos. I don't want my head covered up with anything. I want those, for one thing, I want sound, surround sound, which you can, again, approximate with certain headphones and things, but I want the real deal. So it's speakers and it's surround sound and it's the feel of those subwoofers. I want to feel those subwoofers rattle my t-shirt a little bit.
If I'm in my living room and I want to listen to jazz and listen to it so I feel it, all those things you talked about, can I do that with two speakers and a subwoofer?
Yeah, you can. In fact, you don't even need a subwoofer necessarily. Depending on the music that you're listening to, depending on how good the main speakers are, those are some beautiful listening arrangements. And I'm looking out my window of my office towards, it's kind of just an open area that's a living room, dining room area of our home. And there's a little seating area, and I need to add a two-speaker listening station there. I just don't know what speakers, but there's, I can't remember the brand, but the tall electrostatic speakers, and just a pair of them, and just sit in between them, and it's, you can hear some beautiful sound that way. Absolutely. No subwoofer required.
George Peck and I visit on Thursdays. Our segment is called Tech with Peck. We always appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us. And a quick programming note. Our segment, Tech with Peck, will take next week off. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our weekly visit with George as we continue to explore all things tech here on Main Street.
The Empire Theater Company in Grand Forks presents The Rainbow Fish, the musical. Based on the book by Marcus Pfister, the play tells the story of a fish who learns that kindness and sharing are more important than beauty. Performances run April 23rd through May 3rd at the Empire Arts Center. Details at empireartcenter.com.
Extra, extra, read all about.
There's the music that greets us on Thursdays. It's our time to visit with Prairie Public's news director, Dave Thompson. We review the state and regional news. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. Good to be here.
Dave, a sad story that I'll start visiting about today. Of course, State Representative Liz Conmey was killed in a plane crash in Minnesota just almost a week ago. Dave, what do you remember about Representative Conmey?
Very good person to work with. She kept her head down, didn't make a lot of noise and a lot of speeches on the floor, but everybody liked her. Both people from both parties really liked her because she kept her eyes forward. She kept working. She was very quiet about it, but she did have some influence, especially in judiciary.
Dave, she represented District 11 in the North Dakota House. What's next in finding her replacement?
Well, what's next in finding her replacement, there's some questions about what's going to happen. They will have to make an appointment to have her serve out the rest of the term, and the local district Democratic NPL party will do that. But what happened, she was running for re-election. Were they going to have to wait probably until after the primary election and maybe select somebody then, or back a write-in candidate? So if Liz Conmey goes through the primary, if her name goes through the primary, then that'll be easy because then they can replace them with somebody. But there's still a few questions that have to be answered, and I know that the party is looking into what the options are.
As I understand it, Dave, her name will be on the ballot for the primary.
That is correct, yes.
District 11 is located in Fargo, and specifically it's in the south central part of the city. The University of North Dakota Medical School has a goal. 85% of its MD and physical assistant programs, they want them to be made up of North Dakota students.
Right, and that was something the legislature looked at, and they actually put it in Senate Bill 2003. Lawmakers would like to see as a goal 85% of students be from North Dakota by 2030. So the med school dean, Dr. Marjorie Jenkins, basically said, okay, we're going to do this, and they're working on a pathway to get this done. And she believes that maybe they'll meet the 85% very soon. She's thinking that they'll come close this fall, that they might be over 60%, but we'll find out what happens when they get the figures, the enrollment figures this fall.
Dave, I recall the reason the legislature may wanted to have done this was that students who are from North Dakota are most likely to stay and practice in North Dakota?
That is correct. That's the impetus of that. They said, okay, we get 85% North Dakotans. They will get jobs in North Dakota. They will stay in North Dakota, and especially stay maybe in rural areas of North Dakota, which really are suffering from physician shortages.
Dave, you recently had a chance to moderate a panel at the Travel Industry Conference in Grand Forks. What happened on that panel?
Well, the panel, they asked me to do it we were going to talk to two legislators. One legislator had to quit, so we had a legislator and a lobbyist talk to tourism professionals on how they should approach the upcoming legislative session and what they need to do to tell their stories to lawmakers. And there was possible that maybe some of the tourism profession people were not all that comfortable approaching legislators, but they've got to remember in North Dakota, it's a citizen legislature and they're easy to approach. So that was the point that I think everybody was trying to make. And I think everybody comes out with an understanding that, okay, we can tell our story and we can make some points.
This will be a great year for travel, Dave, of course, with the opening of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library.
Absolutely.
I hate to use cliches, but all eyes really are looking at Medora to see how that impacts travel in the state, I think.
Absolutely, and the travel professionals are really excited for that. That July 4th opening is going to be just spectacular.
Dave, the U.S. House of Representatives have passed what's being called a skinny farm bill. What's the latest with that bill that was approved in the House along party lines?
It was 224 to 200. North Dakota's lone representative in the House voted for that bill. Now, there are some things that farm groups want to see kind of expanded in that bill. They want to have Congress take a deeper dive into some of the consolidation among some of the farm industry folks, you know, the industry for producing some farm products and also for providing fertilizer. They'd like to see if that there's something could be done that could maybe break up some monopolies. But there are still some challenges because you've got to get it in the Senate, you've got to get it through the Senate. But they think that this is at least a stepping stone to further discussions that could happen in the Senate.
Dave, you reported that Senator Hovind is working to increase funding for the Farm Service Agency. What's the latest and why is that important?
It's important because Farm Service Agency people are the ones that work with farmers at their farms. They're representing counties. And there's some concern that there was a hiring freeze for the Farm Service Agency. That's off now. But there is concern among the people who are managing the Farm Service Agencies in the counties that the salaries are not keeping up. That if somebody graduates, they'll go into industry and be paid a lot more than they can with the Farm Service Agency. And they want to tell Congress that FSA officials are the ones on the ground helping the farmers out, giving the farmers some help with what their crops. And they're on the ground. And they want to continue to emphasize that they're the ones who have the direct contact with farmers.
Dave, moving along, you've reported on a fun story or are working on a fun story about windows in the Capitol.
Right. Now, this is going to be replacing windows in the older part of the Capitol. They're not doing it in the what was called the J Wing of the Capitol when the Supreme Court, they built that new J Wing in 1980. Some of these windows date back several years, so they're talking, are you ready for this? 800 plus windows are going to be replaced.
A lot of glass, Dave.
A lot of glass, yes. And at the same time, they're replacing some of the old boilers and some of the old radiators in the Capitol. So there's a lot going on.
Dave, is somebody I know leaving on a jet plane here pretty quick?
Yeah, you can say that again. Going to a place I've never been, which is Japan. Got talked into it by friends, and we're going to go and spend some time in Japan, which will be interesting.
Have a great, great vacation, Dave. I know you're looking forward to it.
I am.
And we'll look forward to visiting with you maybe in a couple weeks here.
Sounds good.
Main Street. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, stay tuned for All Things Considered. On ATC Tonight, sometimes dreams can feel totally lifelike, other times completely bizarre. Either way, new research suggests that dreams may play a role in how well we sleep. That story and more from NPR, that's coming up next on All Things Considered. Tonight at 8 p.m. Central, it's The Middle Live with Jeremy Hobson. We change our minds about little things all the time, but what about the big ones? Your beliefs, your worldview. When was the last time you truly changed your mind, and what led you there? That conversation on self-transformation tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 7 o'clock Mountain, here on Prairie Public. And a quick check of sports. The Minnesota Twins were edged by the Seattle Mariners last night, 5-3 after a late rally in the ninth inning. The Twins are back at it tonight, hosting the Toronto Blue Jays at Target Field. First pitch is set for 7:40 p.m. Central.
Here's Chuck Lura with Natural North Dakota.
You might want to monitor the night sky over the next few weeks. That's because the Eta Aquarius meteor shower is on now and will continue through much of May. There are 9 meteor showers each year, and this one is among the better shows. The Eta Aquarius meteor shower started on April 19th and will run through May 28th. It's considered to be an above-average meteor shower, with the peak viewing period coming up on the evening of May 6th and early morning hours of the 7th, with perhaps 30 or so meteors per hour. That, of course, is about one meteor every couple minutes. And the Eta Aquarids are known to occasionally produce up to 60 meteors per hour during the peak viewing period. There'll be a waning gibbous moon, which will interfere a bit with viewing, but if the sky is clear, it's certainly worth checking out occasionally. Comets are composed of a mixture of ice, rock, and dust. They're often described as big, dirty snowballs a few miles in diameter orbiting around the sun. When they come near the sun, the heat causes them to shed ice and particles. These mostly sand-sized pieces of ice and rock create a debris field in outer space. So when the Earth passes through these debris fields, the pieces collide with the atmosphere and become glowing hot. Observed from the Earth, they're often referred to as falling stars, but are more accurately called meteors. The Eta Aquarids are rather noteworthy because they're caused by particles from Halley's Comet, which is perhaps the most widely known comet. It's named after English astronomer, mathematician, and physicist Edmund Halley, who lived from 1656 to 1742. Among other accomplishments, Halley computed the periodicity of what we now know as Halley's Comet as having an orbit of 75 to 76 years. Halley's Comet made its last approach in 1986. No doubt some of you will be able to see the next pass in 2061. So make a point of checking out the night sky over the next few weeks. The Eta Aquarids are putting on their annual show. I've put links to more information on the meteor shower and Halley's Comet along with the text of this Natural North Dakota. You can access them at prairiepublic.org. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. You can get Natural North Dakota essays delivered to your inbox every week. Sign up for the email newsletter at prairiepublic.org.
This is Bird Note. Video chats help us keep in touch when we're far apart. And now, some birds are in on the fun, too. Knowing how clever parrots are, researchers wanted to see how they'd respond to another parrot saying hi on a tablet or phone. Researchers taught the parrots how to signal they wanted to make a call by ringing a bell, so they could decide for themselves to participate.
Do you want to call a friend?
The bird's caretaker would show the parrot a screen with photos of birds to choose from by touching.
You want to call Rosie?
Then the person would start the call.
You want to say hi? Where is she? Yes. There she is. Yes, that's Rosie. Yes.
Many parrots chatted amiably during the call, behaving much like wild birds keeping in touch with their flock. They often stayed on the phone for the maximum allowed 5 minutes. Some birds even learned skills from each other and seemed to form lasting friendships, continuing to call each other after the experiment. The researchers think that video chats could help enrich the lives of birds in captivity. Sometimes, it's just nice to have a friend to squawk on the phone with. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Livewire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for April 30th. 24 people were injured, and one man died in a train derailment on this date in 1887 near Sterling in Dakota Territory. The passenger train was westbound on the Northern Pacific Line. Its passengers included two companies of soldiers. The train was 4 miles east of Sterling, going down a grade at 25 to 30 miles per hour when the baggage car and three coaches derailed and rolled down an embankment. Officials blamed the wreck on a sun kink in the tracks due to intense heat warping the rails. On the train was William Breed, who was headed to Washington Territory from Minnesota with his parents and siblings. When the train accident happened, he jumped from the rear platform of one of the cars, but was crushed as a car rolled over him. He was just 21 years old. One passenger recounted a couple with four little children who sat opposite him in a car. The children flew about in the air like rubber balls, he reported, but they weren't seriously injured. Physicians came from Bismarck, Jamestown, and Steele to assist. The dining car provided meals while the train was delayed at the wreck site. Some of the soldiers imbibed hospital liquor and began to sing. Most of the injured had slight wounds. Among the seriously injured was a woman who sustained a scalp wound, a badly bruised hand, and bruises all over her body. An assistant superintendent of the Northern Pacific Telegraphy suffered broken legs from large trunks and boxes in the baggage car falling on him. Another man suffered a fractured skull and broken arm. People were amazed only one person died. The tracks were repaired the day of the crash, and the undamaged cars were able to proceed after a delay of 8 hours, and the next day's train ran on time. The crushed cars lay in a shapeless heap beside the tracks and presented a most interesting scene, according to a Bismarck newspaper. The derailment was called the most disastrous on the Northern Pacific in months. Railroad deaths weren't uncommon in those days. People died in train collisions, falling from trains, or by being struck while walking or even sleeping on the tracks. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
President Trump has portrayed his efforts in Iran as a demonstration of American strength and resolve. But the costs of the war are rising. Gas prices are at their highest since the war began. And the president is facing international criticism that he's being outmaneuvered by Iran. Hear more on the next morning edition from NPR News.
starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that's it for this edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Remember, you can hear this and all past episodes of Main Street at our website at prairiepublic.org, or better yet, subscribe to Main Street as one of your favorite podcasts. Coming up Monday on Main Street, UND Distinguished Professor of Philosophy Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein and I will talk about trust in our monthly philosophical currents discussion. Until then, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend, and we look forward to seeing you again right here on Main Street.